Uploading. Tsunami Black Hole Megamix 2K3, now.
The fate of the whole world is in my hands.
You foolish man. I am Ajito Ryo Master. Allow me to reunite you with your ancestors.
Tsunami Generation, and welcome to another episode of Tom's Frogative right here on the Absolution Network. I'm, of course, your Primetime host, Thomas Primetime Metis, and I welcome you to episode 20 of Tom's Frogative. You don't want my notes, it kind of says episode 19 because I forgot to change the 19 to a 20, but that's here nor there. But on this week's episode, we cover our second member of the DC Trinity, since last week we did a Batman movie, and this week we cover Superman, as we will be reviewing a movie based off the best-selling graphic novel, The Death and Return of Superman, that being Superman Doomsday. Yes, this was one of the first PG-13 DC animated movies. In fact, it was the first PG-13 anime movie that Warner Brothers and DC did as part of their direct-to-DVD DC animated movie line, which has been really well-received and done really well, and, you know, it's like every couple of months there's a new movie coming out. Just, you know, past couple of months you had Justice League Doom and Batman Year One, you know, movies like New Frontier. I was like, I blanked there for a second on names of movies, because it's like, I was thinking of the Justice League Tower of Babel, but I'm like, wait a minute, that's still in production. But I know that's being made, but, you know, things like, you know, Wonder Woman, New Frontier, as I said, I'm blanking on the Justice League one where they meet the Injustice League. I hate when I blank, but that's here nor there. But yeah, we're reviewing Superman's Doomsday, is the point I'm trying to get at. As far as this movie is concerned, I have very mixed emotions on this movie, you know. I ultimately, like 5 minutes before I started recording here, I actually did come to the conclusion of what my final rating is. Again, I'll get to that later in the review. But as I hear a phone ringing in the background, you know, live podcasting is awesome, folks. But I do have very mixed emotions about Superman Doomsday. And so, yeah, it's going to be fun to get into it because, you know, in general, up to now, and it's not something that I haven't noticed. I mean, in fact, it's something I've planned because, for the most part, I did want to get titles that I think should get noticed out there more. But I have been generally positive about my reviews since starting, or restarting, for that matter, Tom's Prerogative here on the Absolution Network. Most of the stuff has been stuff I liked, and I've given it positive reviews. Not for, you know, anything of not wanting to review anything bad or not wanting to have a bad thought, but just in general of, here are some titles that don't get reviewed. You know, everybody always reviews all these titles. Here are titles that don't get reviewed, don't get enough credit. You know, mostly because most people like them, and, you know, most podcasters are too busy trying to get an audience by cracking wise and being funny and, you know, crapping on stuff. So it's going to be very interesting to have sort of a mixed review here. We're also going to do synopsis a tad bit different, but we'll do that after we do our cast. Of course, we have no iTunes or email comments. Guys, please send that stuff in. You know, yeah, I'm begging. Make a big deal about me begging. But that's here nor there. By the way, I also would like to let people know I call this the Michael Bailey episode. mostly because I'm probably be quoting Michael Bailey a lot, since a lot of what I've learned about the comic that this movie is based off of, and of Superman in general, has come from Michael Bailey. So, if I get anything wrong, blame Michael Bailey. Go to him with your pitchforks and torches. anyways, let's start with cast. First, Adam Baldwin, you know, is probably a lot of us best known from Chuck and that other movie I can't remember, plays Superman and Clark Kent. Anne Hesh plays Lois Lane. James Marsters plays Lex Luthor. Tom Kennedy plays the robot. Adam Wiley plays Jimmy Olsen. Ray Wise plays Perry White. And Swosi Kutz plays Martha Kent. Cree Summers plays Mercy Graves. And the legendary John DiMaggio plays the Toy Man. A Albert perverted looking Toy Man. But again, we'll get to that later. Synopsis is very simple. You know, Superman is, you know, dating Lois Lane. Lois wants to move their relationship further, but as this is happening, a savage creature is unleashed and starts tearing up Metropolis. Superman has to do battle with him. They fighty-fight, and, you know, while Superman stops the creature, he ends up dying in the process. Everybody is sad, but all of a sudden a new Superman comes out, but it's revealed to be a clone, formerly Lex Luthor, you know, do his bidding. When all of a sudden the real Superman reappears, they fighty-fight, and the real Superman is able to destroy the, or at least kill the clone, and, you know, the day is saved. You know, again, being surrounded about the, you know, actual death and return sort of graphic novel. I want to do a short synopsis there for a reason, because I'd rather get, for a short while here, into the actual book that it is based off of, even though the movie is really, and this is why I have a mixed review of the movie, by the way, is really a shade of, you know, the actual graphic novel. But I just want to go in sort of a brief history of the death and return of Superman, because there is an actual great documentary that's on this DVD. You know, it's one of the reasons why I have a mixed review of the movie as well, is that when the special sort of look into what the movie is based off of, that documentary that is on the DVD is better than the movie itself, which, again, it's not completely the movie's fault. I mean, the documentary is absolutely spectacular, but still, when that documentary is better than the movie itself, and you spend more time watching it than you do the movie, something has to be up. Now, again, not completely the movie's fault. The documentary is absolutely incredible. But the documentary I'm talking about is called Superman Requiem. It's special on the DVD. And it goes into what led to the death of Superman and the whole rebirth and everything that was happening at that time. Mainly talking to Mike Carlin, Jerry Ordway, Dan Jurgens, Louis Simonson, Roger Stern, and a couple of others I'm, you know, blanking on. But basically, as the story goes, you know, around 91, 92, you know, at the annual Superman meeting where all the Superman writers, because at the time they had the triangle numbering system in the Superman comics, you know, they had their annual Superman meet where they planned out their stories for the year. And they were actually planning on marrying Superman slash Clark Kent to Lois Lane, because at the time, Clark had just, revealed his identity and proposed to Lois. And nobody had a problem with them getting married, which is a whole other quagmire of a discussion to get into why comic book writers, especially like Joe Quesada, which again, I'm not going to get on my Joe Quesada hate, but seem to hate marrying comic book characters. We can kill people, rape them, do all sorts of stuff, but heaven forbid we marry them. It's like trying to figure out how the stock market works, but that's here right there. We're not getting into that. Anyways, as I start to go on a rant. But, anyways, they were having their meeting, and they planned on marrying. Nobody had a problem with it, except that the WB, or Warner Brothers for that matter, had, they had just canceled the Superboy series, and they had planned on starting a new Superman series called Lois and Lane. And while they loved the idea of Superman slash Clark Kent and Lois Lane getting married in the comics, they didn't want the comics to do it before they did in Lois and Lane, which they had planned on doing, which was 3 seasons away. So, basically, these writers all had to scrap their, ideas for the year of leading up to the marriage. So, they were banging their heads for like 3 days trying to figure out what to do, because they had to scrap it like halfway through the summit. When Jerry Orway, as legend goes, though I've also heard some people say it's Dan Jurgens, said, let's just kill him, which Jerry apparently says at every summit. He says, let's just kill him. I says, that's nice, Jerry. Here's a cookie. at least that's what Roger Stern says in the documentary, which is funny as hell. But anyways, he always says, let's just kill him. Well, he says it now, and everybody's like, yeah, let's just kill him. And that led to, this whole storyline coming about. It led to Doomsday, which is what the creature's name is Doomsday. And the rest of the documentary probably will go over the whole death and rebirth a lot better than I do. I've actually read issues of comics. In fact, I have issue 75, and just some of the unique things they did, as they got closer and closer to death, they slowly whittled down the number of panels on each page in each issue. Like, 4 issues away from the death of Superman, it was, 4 panels on each page. The next issue, as they got closer to death, it was 3 panels per page. The next issue was 2. It's a very subtle thing, but when you actually go back and look at it and realize what they did, it's a beautiful thing. And there was a lot of really complexity, even though ultimately the fight between Doomsday and Superman was a big fighty fight, there was a lot of complexity, and, it's one of things like the recent Max Landis sort of, which I understand was not made for comic book fans, it was made for hipsters. But really, stuff like that, that makes fun of stuff that they really did enjoy, but let's make fun of it now, because it's cool to make fun of it. Yeah. But that's here and over there, yeah. I just wanted to do something a little different for synopsis. So, with all of that being said, let's get our focus back on the object at hand, Superman Doomsday, and let's review Superman Doomsday. And welcome back, and I probably don't have the Superman Doomsday theme actually playing in the background. That's a sort of traditional Superman theme. I tried to get the Superman Doomsday theme, but I couldn't get a quality that I enjoyed. So I do apologize for that, but welcome finally to the review of Superman Doomsday. And let's get into it as we usually do. Let's start off with music. And speaking of the Superman Doomsday theme, let's actually talk about the theme and sort of compare it with other Superman themes. Funny thing is, I actually haven't watched the movie in about 2 years. I put this DVD in, but again, like I said, it's to watch the actual special. So this is like my first time of watching the movie itself in about, I would say, 2 years. Maybe a year and a half, somewhere around that time frame. But it's interesting because, again, I bring up my friend Micah Bailey, and he has his podcast called From Crisis to Crisis, which you hear, a promo for on every episode if you listen all the way through the episode. In fact, you'll probably hear it after the music, because that's where I usually put it. But anyways, their opening theme song for From Crisis to Crisis is actually the Superman Doomsday theme. So I actually put the DVD in, and I went to get something to drink, and the movie starts up, and I hear, dun-dun-dun. And I hear the theme, and I'm like, is From Crisis to Crisis on? And I have to go check my computer, like, did I put From Crisis to Crisis podcast on? I'm like, oh, it's the movie! Which, I don't know if that's sad that, you know, I hear the theme and I automatically think From Crisis to Crisis instead of, you know, Superman Doomsday's movie theme. But, you know what? It has all the things that a Superman theme, as Michael Bailey puts it, needs, you know, a lot of brass. You know, it has sort of the grandeur that Superman themes have. And you know what? At the end of the day, it is a theme that I do enjoy. It's very different from sort of the other Superman themes, which I like. At the same point in time, I think I'm more of a traditionalist, and I do like the other Superman themes more. I think I definitely love the animated series theme, which I do think this is more of a playoff of more, and I do like the sort of the classic John Williams score. But at the end of the day, this is a very good theme. Again, like I said, based off what I've learned from Michael Bailey, it's everything a Superman Doomsday theme, or should I say a Superman theme. I keep saying Superman Doomsday theme, like there are more than one Superman Doomsday theme. I apologize. No, it has everything a Superman theme is supposed to have. It has the brass. It has sort of the loud sort of percussion, you know. And again, this just grand, sort of the grand arrival of like a great character that, you know, a Superman theme is supposed to have. So I very much enjoy that. Moving on to the rest of the overall score of the movie. Outside of the theme, nothing really perked my interest. I didn't find anything peculiar to know, you know, really. I mean, nothing stood out. It didn't overtake the movie. But at the same point in time, I never felt like, you know, the scenes I were watching were being enhanced by the music in the background. I mean, nothing really, you know, piqued my interest. Maybe the one exception being sort of the theme around Doomsday when he first escapes and he's killing people. You know, and breaking people's necks, which, is it said that's the best part of the movie for me? I guess we'll get into that more later, but, you know, nothing really jumped out, you know. It didn't overpower the movie, which was good, but at the same time, it didn't feel like the music was really enhancing anything, which is what you want and really do expect from, you know, a Bruce Timm produced show, which really surprises me because, you know, I've seen so much Bruce Timm stuff, it's really hard for me to find something that Bruce Timm did that I don't like. Or should I say, Purdue, him and Alan Burnett and you know, the other people who work on the DC animated stuff have done over the past 20 years that I hate as far as, you know, DC superhero characters. This is like an anomaly to me. And, you know, part of it is they usually have good music. And in this case, there's nothing that jumps out. It doesn't do anything bad, but it doesn't do anything good either. It's just average. It's just there. So, you know, it's a decent score when I am able to listen to it. But outside of maybe the Superman theme and, you know, Doomsday theme, there's really nothing amazing about this score. So it's pretty average. And that's it for music. So we're going to take a quick break and you're going to hear a promo for From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast. And when we come back, we're going to get right into animation.
Hey everyone, my name is Michael Bailey.
And I'm Jeffrey Taylor.
And we host a podcast called From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast.
Presented by the Superman homepage. On the show... Wait.
What?
This just isn't working out for me. It's not bombastic enough. We need something epic.
Like what?
Welcome to From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast, presented by the Superman homepage. I am Jeffrey Taylor.
And I am Michael Bailey.
From Crisis to Crisis chronicles the adventures of Superman.
Wait. I'm just not feeling this.
I'm just wondering how there's a needle scratching sound when all of this is clearly digital.
Look, all we need to say is that this is a trailer for a show called From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast presented by the Superman homepage. My name is Michael Bailey.
I'm Jeffrey Taylor.
And every week we give in-depth synopsis and reviews for just about every Superman book published between Man of Steel number 1 in 1986.
And Adventures of Superman number 649 in 2006. We also talk about the related Superman media, what was happening in the rest of the world when these comics were published, and what else was going on in the DC Universe.
The show drops every Thursday-ish at the Superman homepage, which is located at www.supermanhomepage.com.
From Crisis to Crisis is also a proud member of the Superman Podcast Network, located at www.supermanpodcastnetwork.com.
So join Jeffrey and I each week as we explore Superman during the post-crisis era, which includes Exile, Panic in the Sky, Doomsday, The Marriage, and beyond.
And write into the show at FromCrisisToCrisis@gmail.com and hear it read on the air, eventually, because we get behind on that sort of thing.
Superman created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster. Side effects from Crisis to Crisis include loss of money from buying back issues, a desire to read 20-year-old comic books, nausea, drowsiness, pizza, blurred vision, upset stomach, a desire to kick puppies and kittens, and backache from lifting boxes of Superman comics. If the excitement of From Crisis to Crisis lasts more than 4 hours, seek immediate medical attention.
And welcome back, and let's get right into animation. And first, let's talk about the overall style of Superman Doomsday. Again, I point to sort of the PG-13 aspect of this film because it did seem like a lot of the focus on this film was like, hey, we're doing a PG-13 movie and a PG-13 Superman movie at that point. It seemed like maybe a more mature version of sort of the Bruce Timm Superman animated series sort of art style. I mean, really, this series was sort of a sort of segue, per se, between sort of the classic Bruce Timm animated style that you'd seen in, you know, the television series like Batman the Animated Series, Superman, Static Shock, Batman Beyond, you know, his sort of classic style into sort of the unique style that we'll see in the DC animated movies where, being that they are based off of actual titles most of the time, You know, they're actually getting other people to be the main artist and that stuff, and Bruce Timm is mostly just directing instead of also being head artist and really being his style. And it really seems like a mixture of that. And really a sort of more mature, more adult version of sort of Bruce Timm's style. There are some characters where I see this and I like it, and then there are some characters where I don't, you know. We'll get to those characters when we do. Speaking of character designs, let's get right into them. Let's start off with Superman and Clark Kent. And overall, I'm mixed on his design. I mean, I like most of it, but I don't know. The way he has his cheeks, they pop, especially when he's in Superman, they pop out to me. But it's like, for some reason, I just don't like it. It just seems odd to me. And it sometimes takes me out, you know, of the movie, which is a very bad thing. I mean, I enjoy the rest of the design. He's built like Superman should be built. You know, that sort of classic, sort of straw man build that Superman has. But at the same point in time, I don't know what it is about those cheeks. It just looks very, very odd for the way he has, you know, it's sort of this, like, half square thing that you see on his cheeks where it's, you know, down and across like this, like, oh, like you could actually see what I'm doing on my face, but, you know, if you've seen the movie, you know exactly what I'm talking about, or I should say when you see the movie, you'll see what I'm talking about. But it's very confusing. It does take me out. I think it's a perfect amalgamation of what this movie is, at least as far as I'm concerned, where it's a lot of opinions are mixed. But like I said, overall, I do like the fact that they get the classic Superman build right. But there's just some tiny little details there that I think, you know, they could have left. And really, that's what it is. Is the stuff, the things on the cheeks, I think they could have left out, and it would have been fine. You know, some small little details here or there that I think they could have left out, and it would have been fine. You know, they didn't need those things there. It was extra detail that they didn't need. Let's move on to Lois Lane, and Lois Lane is on the complete other side. I love Lois's design. The long hair, sort of, you know, again, one of the things about Lois Lane, at least from my reading of Superman, or at least when I read Superman and the gist I've gathered from Superman experts like Michael Bailey, to me, he's a Superman expert. He's the person I go to whenever I need to know something about Superman. But, you know, from my experience, from all that I've learned is, you know, again, she is the modern woman, and a lot of it should, you know, she screams sort of that modern woman, that perfect attitude of sort of sexiness and yet sophistication. And we see that with Lois, definitely, you know, with the long hair. They, you know, it's funny, I'm like, is it just me, or does she seem like she's a bit darker than she should be? I mean, she must get one hell of a tan every week somewhere. Where, I don't know. But that's here nor there. I mean, does she go to a tanning saloon? Does she go down to New Jersey to get, like, half off then? Or something like that? I don't know. But, I mean, she's got one hell of a tan on her. I mean, she seems a bit more tan, you know, because more pastely, I don't want to say pastely white, but, you know, I didn't expect Lois to be that tan. But with that being said, it works. And I think her design is spot on, and I think it's a very good design for Lois Lane. I'd love to see more of this design in more things of Lois Lane, for that matter. Doomsday, again, I love this design because it really is almost a direct, you know, translation from the comics. the one part that isn't is they really... This Doomsday does seem to be like a sort of a modulation of sort of the Doomsday from the comics and a Doomsday from the sort of Justice League and, you know, animated series, because he is a cyborg, or at least they sort of hint that he's a cyborg when they show his eyes and they show the things in there. And to my knowledge is that the original Doomsday was never a cyborg of any kind. He was a biological living creature. Which, again, I don't like that there isn't any voice, because, you know, if you've actually read the actual comics where Doomsday appears, there is some very, in some funny scenes where he does talk. One of them being where, you know, he's fighting Superman as he heads towards Metropolis, and, you know, he's there in the supermarket, and there's this TV playing doing this ad for a wrestling event at Metropolis, you know, killing, and the monster goes, Metropolis. And it adds some depth to the character. And again, that's something we'll get more into with story, but it's something that is sorely missing in this movie. But overall, I love sort of the style. It's exactly what Doomsday looks like. And, you know, it looks like a menacing creature that can be a match for Superman. That's what I like about Doomsday design, I think, most of all. Lex Luthor, he has the design of Luthor, but you know what? He's just too skinny for my taste. You know, I, for what I know of Lex Luthor and that, I like him to be, I think, a bit more sort of, I don't want to say bulkier, because I don't think that's what, you know, would help, but, you know, more of a stronger build. You know, he just seems a bit too skinny for me in his design. I mean, head looks like it's supposed to be, you know, it's a decent design, but again, it's just too skinny for my taste. Jimmy Olsen looks like Jimmy Olsen, except for the earring in his ear. I guess that, you know, it's that thing to where, oh, Jimmy Olsen's the pal of Clark Kent and Superman, and, you know, he's hit with the crowd, and so since it's 2000, he has to have a earring in his ear, and it's, it just kept distracting me. I mean, it's something I noticed actually later on in the movie, so I don't know if he had that at the beginning when they were doing Doomsday, and I don't know if he got that afterwards, but, you know, it just kept distracting me. But, you know, besides the earring, which is really nitpicking, to be, and I can be honest about that, it is me nitpicking. It's not that I'm trying to find stuff to not like, I'm trying to figure out why do I not like this? Not that I don't like it, but why is this design irritating me? Because that's what I thought when, you know, I saw Jimmy Olsen. It's like, it's everything Jimmy Olsen needs to be. It's Jimmy Olsen. I like it. Why is it irritating me? And the earring. But overall, it's design. Perry White, again, it, you know, going into sort of these sort of sub-characters. You know, Perry White looks like Perry White. Very good design. Martha Kent, you know, sort of that motherly figure that, you know, Clark Kent, you know, looks up to. I like her design. Again, if you're going more into story, but I wish there was more with Martha. But again, we'll get, a lot of this has to do with story, so I apologize if I seem like I'm moving by too fast. But, you know, overall, I enjoy her design. Marcy Gray, or Marcy Graves, excuse me. Okay. She's supposed to be this important character, but from the design and everything, she just didn't seem that special, especially since, you know, she gets killed off halfway through the movie. Spoiler alert, by the way. So she just didn't seem that special. And then the last character design is Toy Man. And, you know, I hope some of the people that are watching this, or let's just say listening to this podcast, because you can't watch a podcast. But if there's any Superman fans out there that were reading during this time, and or, you know, we can get back to me maybe before I, you know, maybe talk to Michael Bailey and ask him about it. But was Toyman like this? Because I don't remember in any of the books I've read of this time of Toyman ever looking like this or ever being this, like, straight-up pedophile. Because let's say, you know, it's weird. This Toyman, it creeps. If the point of the design was to creep me out, it did that. But it just seemed unnecessary. Like, well, we need a reason for, you know, Superman, the clone Superman, to ultimately kill him. Again, spoiler alert. If you haven't watched this movie after the, you know, 3 to 4 years it's been out. But, you know, it just made him weird and creepy, and again, why not go with, especially since you're really going with a lot of designs of sort of the Bruce Timm classical style, why not go with the original Toyman theme? You know, I guess it's here nor there, but it is, man, it just creeped me out, and it just, the design felt unnecessary. It's like, we need to make this character this, and again, this goes more into story, but you know, we need to make this character, we need to sort of really accentuate that, you know, he's this pedophile type of character, and it just felt unnecessary. That's the thing, ultimately, about the design of Toyman that I feel, is that it all just felt unnecessary. With that, let's move on to special effects. Again, not much. Not really anything stood out. I mean, the special effects look good. Shadows were done really well. It's pretty much everything you expect from a Bruce Timm, you know, series. But they just didn't dumb it. Not like Batman Beyond or maybe some of the other movies we're going to be reviewing where the special effects really jump out. The special effects seemed like they were the special effects that were used in sort of the Bruce Timm series. And that's, again, I keep going back to this. It just seems as if this was a sort of PG-13 version of Superman the Animated Series. As if this was like sort of a 3-part special that was PG-13. That was never released. And you see that in the special effects. You don't see that, however, in the backgrounds, which I thought were done really, really well. And there's just some great background work. Great work on, you know, buildings being destroyed and rubble and all that. And again, that goes into special effects. But it's just a lot of times when I was looking mostly at the special effects, they seemed like they were right out of Batman the Animated Series. The backgrounds, however, are just gorgeous to look at. And you definitely see this evolution of Bruce Timm's style and the evolution of the DC animated department. So that's it for animation. We're going to take a quick break and have a promo from another podcast. And when we get back, we're going to dive finally into story.
December 7th.
Earth 2.
1941.
A world very much like our own, yet slightly different.
A date which will live in infamy.
A world at war.
The United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan.
Following the Japanese sneak attack on Pearl Harbor, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt brought together the largest group of mystery men ever assembled to battle the Axis powers. Tales of the Justice Society of America presents the All-Star Squadron.
The Tales of the Justice Society of America, every Friday at twotruefreaks.libsyn.com.
And welcome back, and let's get right into the story. And the first topic I want to talk about is, let's talk about the adaptation of the film, or should I say, the film's adaptation of the comic book source material. You know, at the end of the day, I think the best way to put it is that the film is really a shade of the entire death and return of the Superman story. And again, it's not that I expected everything that was in the story be put into the movie, because, you know, I can understand there has to be some things left out for the movie. But at the same point in time, you know, they treat sort of the fight between Superman. I mean, this is a movie that is an hour and 20 minutes long, basically. And really, all those 19 minutes go into introducing the first 19 minutes of the movie is really them introducing the characters and the whole fight with Doomsday. And by the time they get to an hour left mark, you know, Superman's already dead. It just seems as though they moved way too quickly through things. And again, it was just a shade of the comic. I mean, why couldn't this movie, if it's an hour, why couldn't it be an hour and 40 minutes? That way you could put some more stuff in. You know, maybe a longer fight, you know. I mean, again, I guess because, as I've been saying, you know, this seemed like it was sort of a more PG-13 version of the Superman, the animated series. It's why they couldn't have this. But again, the whole fight with the JLI, Justice League International team, that happened in the comics was a big part of the fight, you know, or at least part of the lead-up. Obviously, that whole part was cut out and changed with something else that, you know, it did its part of showing Doomsday as this vicious, sort of murdering beast, you know, in that he killed, you know, sort of the science team, and we're killing these people on the way to Metropolis. But at the same point in time, I think there was a lot more context and sort of a deeper relationship, and seeing the JLI team, which, you know, for those who don't know, the JLI team is, you know, Blue Beetle, Booster Gold, Guy Gardner. There's a character, Blood something, that I'm blanking on, who was really the Martian Manhunter. Fire. Or was it? It was Ice or Fire. I believe both of them were on there. Fire and Ice were both on there. And there was another female character who I'm blanking on, and I apologize. I should notice, since, again, Michael Bailey and Jeffrey Taylor over at From Crisis to Crisis just covered this for the past couple of months. But, you know, they played a huge part in, you know, being the first ones to meet and fight Doomsday, and him just going through those superheroes like they were cardboard, you know, sent a huge, powerful message. And then, of course, the huge fight, which it wasn't just fighty-fighty. You know, it was Superman putting him in, you know, deep into the sediment of a lake so he could go save people. It was him chasing after Doomsday and seeing this house where a mother and her two children were about to be, you know, the house was about to explode, and trapped in it were a mother and her two children, and Superman peeling away from saving Doomsday, or stopping Doomsday to save the children before going back to fight them. You know, there's all this complexity to the fight of him trying to chase down Doomsday. Doomsday doing something that's causing people to be in trouble. Him having to save people. Him fighting Doomsday for a bit. Other people getting in trouble. Having to save them. You know, just a complexity to the fight. And for all the matter of this being PG-13, and again, I'm going into the fight, it just didn't seem like the complexity was there. Same thing with the whole, you know, return. It just being, you know, first off, it just being a clone of Lex Luthor, and it just, you know, the whole, well, the robot, you know, just listened to the pulse of Superman, found him in Lex Luthor's enthralls, brought him back and helped, you know, with a sort of dwarf yellow sun, brought him back. It took away the whole complexity that made the whole return of Superman in the comics really good. And I understand people don't like some of the characters that came out of it, but I'm sorry, you know, it did add to it. You know, the Eradicator, the Cyborg, which was the villain of the, you know, groups. You know, Superboy, who was a clone by Lex Luthor. But, you know, he was a Metropolis kid, and yeah, he was a clone. And then you had Steel, John Henry Irons, and all four of those characters, which was shown, again, that's how they showed how important Superman was, you know, besides the great sort of December issue where the whole Justice League goes through Superman's fan mail after he dies, because Superman, you know, has all this fan mail, and on Christmas, he goes out and does all these wishes for people, and so they have to do them, and they realize, oh my god, how did he do this all in one night? Kind of like Santa Claus. But, you know, they brought these four characters in the show, like, they needed four characters just to do the job of Superman doing these different things, and, you know, it led to sort of this great mystery of who is the real Superman? Who is Superman? Where is the real Superman? And eventually learned that basically his body had been launched through the sun, kind of like, you know, how Spock was in Star Trek 2. Well, Spock was launched towards a planet, excuse me, let me get that right. I'm not a big Star Trek fan, but yeah, Superman was launched to the sun, and his metabolism had lowered, and being in the sun revived him, but still, it is the matter of, there seemed to be more mystery to it, there seemed to be more meat, more complexity. Ultimately, when you look at the film's adaptation of the comic book source material, as I said before, and you look at all of that, it's a shade of what the comic book was. You know, I can understand them having to cut stuff, but it just seemed like, again, we want to make it a shade. And again, it goes back to, this seems a whole lot more like they were more focused on, hey, we're doing a Superman story that's PG-13. And for that matter, again, this is a great segue into point two, which is talking about the fights and with Doomsday and the Superman clone, which is that, you know, really it's just that one scene where Superman's spitting up tons of blood. You know, you don't see bruises, and that's when you actually read the comic, you know, there are all these bruises and just welts, and super, you know, when you see Superman dying, he looks like he's been in a war. It's not just, oh, a little bit of his costume's ripped and there's a bit of blood on his lip. You know, he has a black eye, his eye's swollen shut. It looks like a prize fighter that's been in the fight of his life and is dying in the ring. And I just didn't get that from this movie. And, you know, again, that's why it's a whole shade of sort of the comic book source material. But again, going into the fight between Doomsday and the Superman clones, these were parts of the movies that I did enjoy. I love the fights. And I hate saying that because I know that Superman is more than just fighty-fighty. You know, as Michael Bailey says all the time, you know, Superman kind of is like religion. You know, you either get it or you don't. And I think I'm in between, you know. Again, Superman's not my favorite character. I do like him. I like more of his supporting cast better. You know, Supergirl, Superboy, Power Girl, you know, Steel. Because I just find it interesting of them, these people who are looking up towards him, trying to, I don't want to say emulate him, but trying to inspire towards the same goodness he is, and yet, because they're not him, because, you know, Superman / Clark Kent is this really this special person that's unique more than anybody, the difficulties they have because of that. But with that being said, I do sort of understand what the character is about. He's more than just fighty-fighty. It's about his uniqueness as a character, which is very interesting, which, again, I don't think we see much of in this movie. But with the fights, again, I do enjoy seeing Superman just bust the, excuse my language, but bust the motherfucker up. You know, him being put into a situation to where he does have to fight. I sometimes think that DC gets away from that too much. I think there has to be a balance to it, by the way. You know, in the comics or in any movie, to where, you know, you show Superman using his brain, you show him using his powers, but you have to balance it to putting occasionally in a situation to where he has to, you know, go all punchy, punchy, fighty, fighty on it. With that being said, again, in these movies, you know, the fights are brutal. They have a great organic flow. I mean, especially the fight with Doomsday. It's just like, okay, now it's over. Now it's over. And as much as I wish it was longer, it comes from the fact that I really enjoyed it. You know, them, you know, jumping to the sky, crashing down into the subway, you know, Doomsday putting his head against the subway car, just hanging on to the helicopter, you know, and then the way it ended. I will say this, I like the way the fight ended in the comic books more than it did in the movie. In the movie, it was, okay, I'm going to grab him, jump as high as I can to this guy, and then come crashing back down. Well, in the comics, he did that, and it still didn't stop him. I liked it more to where they're just throwing haymakers. They're both at wit's end, and they both throw one final haymaker, and they both collide. It's that sort of classic dramatic moment of them hitting at the same time, and that sort of double KO. I love that part more than I do the way the movie ends it. And then with the Superman clone, I love sort of the organic feel. I love, you know, you're on edge because you know, or at least they let you know, that Superman's not at full power and that stuff. And ultimately, Lois Lane being the one that sort of helps out and turns the tide, I enjoy. And I do gotta admit, I do like, you know, sort of, here, let me, that sort of, that kiss at the end of the movie, but, the end of the movie, but the end of that fight. But yeah, it was a good organic fight, you know, from the start to where the military attacks the Superman clone and him just laying waste, you know, puts you into an idea of what Superman could possibly do if he really unleashed and just decided to be an asshole. But at the same point in time, you know, when the fight happens, a very good organic flow. Let's move on to talking point number three. You know, I do like some of the ways that they, you know, showed the different characters grappled with the Superman's death. But again, it goes back to that whole shades aspect. Like, they did it, but it just seemed like it was a shade of what they wanted to do. Again, Lois meeting with Martha, which, by the way, I did not like that they just didn't have Pa Kent there. Because he was, during the comic books, he was alive. I don't know why they didn't have Pa Kent there. I'm getting crossed up, because it just would have added more towards that whole, you know, sort of segment of how it affected Lois, how it affected. Again, I keep going back to the comic book, and I apologize, but again, it's, I think the comic book did this so much better than what this movie did. In the comic book, you know, you had where, you know, again, Lois knew Clark was Superman, but she sort of couldn't reveal that, you know, she, you know, that Superman was Clark Kent, for one, and two, that, you know, she was Superman's girlfriend. And she had to be quiet about it. And in the book, you had this woman who comes out and says, oh, I was Superman's secret lover. And she's given these exposés of who Superman was. And, you know, she just wants to go wring this woman's neck and punch her lights out, but she can't. And she can't do anything about it. And she, you know, she waits. And she finally goes to Smallville and goes to see, you know, Ma and Pa Kent, who, you know, they couldn't come to the funeral because they felt if they did, they might give away his secret identity. And, you know, they had been feeling all this sadness. And the meeting and just this outpouring of emotion, here it's a shade of that. And it doesn't have quite the power. And I think it's a missed opportunity. I mean, Jimmy's eventually going to a sort of tabloid, is the way it's done in the comic. I have no problem with that. Again, Perry turning to drinking. And then, of course, Lex Luthor. Because they focus so much on him just being a plain bad guy, again, they missed an opportunity of the complexity of Lex Luthor. You know, Lex Luthor, and again, in the comics, you know, he creates the Metropolis Kid. You know, he creates all this because he feels there needs to be a Superman. It's not this overall feeling for just being evil like it's sort of done in the movie. And there's just the way they have these characters handle it, I think, is a missed opportunity. Now, with that being said, I think a lot of Lex's inner monologue is brilliant and a joy to see. James Marsis does a wonderful job saying those lines. So overall, you know, the way I like the way they did show them handling Superman's death, but again, it feels like it's a shade of what was done in the comics, and it feels like they missed the mark and they missed opportunities to really show emotion. Next talking point is Superman's return, and I keep going back. It's really hard, once you've actually finally get to read the story, to go back, watch the movie, and put it in any sense of a context. You know, I had to watch this movie twice, because I was doing that, and then I had to, like, and that's why I keep talking about shades and missing the mark. Because even when you put it out, the comic out of your mind, and you just watch the movie for itself, it feels like they missed the mark, or they missed chances of complexity. And I say that because that's what Bruce Timm is known for, is doing these animated series and putting so much complexity into the characters and all this. And it feels like they missed the mark. And I think, ultimately, how Superman is brought back to life is a perfect chance, a perfect example of that. You know, the robot just finds his body, brings it back, and puts some matter into him. You know, that, and again, there's a Superman clone. You could still do that whole I can understand that maybe they couldn't introduce four different characters, but even if it was just, you know, a simple Superman's clone, and that stuff, I think there were ways to do it that could have made it more complex. You know, you're telling me you couldn't do maybe a 5-minute scene to where you got a bunch of the superhero characters and showed them launching Superman into the sun? You know, following what was done, wasn't done completely in the story, but doing something that was sort of similar done in sort of the animated series, I think would have been better. And I just think complexity, you know, there's a scene to where the Superman clone goes into that hair saloon, and you see him looking at the mirror, and you think, oh, he's going to mutilate his face. And there's nothing. There's just that round circle. Again, you have that PG-13 rating. Why can't you show him mutilating his face? Or better yet, instead of making it just a full-on clone, make it sort of a sort of clone sort of cyborg, so that there's that metal underneath, like sort of the cyborg was in the actual comic book. You know? I think there are ways to add more complexity to it. Here, again, it feels like a shade of the comic book, a shade of the animated series, and it feels like they just missed the mark on doing something interesting. It's okay for what, and that's the thing about all of this. The fights are good. How they handle the deaths are okay, though. Superman's Return is okay. The overall movie is okay. But it just feels like they missed the mark. And ultimately, as I finish talking about this movie, that's my ultimate feeling. Is they missed the mark. There are good things about this movie. And at the end of the day, you know what? I could sit down, watch this movie, and enjoy it. But I just feel like they missed the mark. And it's not even a want to, oh, they have to be exactly like the comic book. I can understand that they can't put everything in. I understand maybe there are problems with putting so much characters in, even though this is owned by Warner Brothers. It's owned, you know, they have the rights to these characters. We know that because of Justice League Unlimited. You know, they could put these characters in if they want. But I understand they were on a budget, limited sources, resources for that matter, and time. You know, they couldn't maybe put four characters. But at the same point in time, it feels like there were still options to make this movie better that they could have taken, and they didn't. You know, and again, it goes to another, I think, problem with this movie is, really to put it, its pace. This movie moves way too fast in telling this story. You know, this story needs at least another 20 minutes to be told. To a really good potential. And they really just speed through this whole death and return of Superman story. And again, it misses the mark. It's a shade of what this whole story is about. And it feels like it misses the mark. Overall, I give this movie a 3 out of 5. Because separating it from the comic, it is a decent movie. And you know what? It's a good start to the whole PG-13 era of, you know, the whole DC DVD direct line. But as for its source material and everything, it feels like it misses the mark. It feels like it's a shade of the source material. And it feels like there's so much more they could do. So a 3 out of 5 for Superman Doomsday from me. And that's it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. I hope you enjoyed it. Remember, if you have any comments on what I've said, you know, your feelings about, you know, different opinions, and trust me, I'm glad to hear it. Because I know I had a lot of mixed opinions on this movie. I would love to hear other people's opinions on this movie. You know, there are numerous ways for you to do that. You can email me at absolution132@yahoo.com, and 132 is in numbers, so it's 132, so absolution132, all one word, @yahoo.com. You can leave me a comment on the site, which you can find at www.an.132productions.com. For all you future people that get this show on iTunes, if we ever get on iTunes, you can reach the show by leaving iTunes comments. And those are all the ways you can reach me, and please, guys, send in. I'd love to hear what other people think about this movie. Of course, remember to check out all my other sites that you can find as part of 132 Productions, which include Tokyo SOS, a Godzilla podcast, which you can find at www.tokyosos.132productions.com, and of course, Comic Book Crazy, which you can find at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. Of course, on Comic Book Crazy, you have the Comic Book Crazy podcast, Hexcast, the only podcast that reviews Tarot, Witch of the Black Rose, and the Comic Book Pitch. And, of course, remember to check out all our friends, which you find on the sidebar of the site, including our friends whose promo I played. But check out our friends on the sidebar, like Michael Bailey's and Jeffrey Taylor's from Crisis to Crisis, Michael Bailey's views from the Long Box, Brad Douglas's Spider-Man Crawl Space, Steven Schleicher's Major Spoilers, Scott Gardner's 2-2 Freaks, Clone Saga Chronicles, Backer the Oracle, Barbara Gordon Podcast, Dragon Ball Z Podcast by our good friend Donovan and Donovan Morgan Grant and Jesse Garrett. And of course, all our other friends, you know, check them out. They do great work. You can find them on the sidebar of the site. Definitely go see. And that's it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. Next week, we finish off the Trinity as we explore what I think is actually one of the best, you know, DC direct-to-DVD movies that they did. That's right. Next week, we dive into Wonder Woman. So until next time, my Tsunami generation, stay golden.
A cursed samurai. You have succeeded again in eluding my effort. But I am not worried. For one day you will fail.
By DJ Clark Nova. Don't sleep on it.